tests in the year since that reactor was discovered and their proliferation was discovered.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
It's hard to believe that only once a year we celebrate the women in our life. Our mother, our wife, our mom. How can we put a value on all the countless times you were there? It's our hope that this Mother's Day, someone who loves you will find just the right opportunity and gently hand you a small, beautiful bronze box that reads, Mac and Sons. You know, and I know, there's jewelry waiting patiently inside that box. We also both know it's not just about the object inside, but a way for us to tell you thank you, and we love you. People that buy jewelry from the master jewelers at Mac and Sons are not just buying diamonds, gold, or jewelry. They know the lessons you taught them are worth more than gold, and the lifetime of love you showed them is more precious than any diamond. When you're handed that striking bronze box with Mac and Sons on it, you'll know this year they wanted your gift to be perfect. Mac and Sons, the master jewelers on the boulevard at Bluff.
When it comes to politics, I'm well past the tinfoil hat stage. I need a good helmet for the banging my head against the wall stage. The Kate Daly Show starts now.
I was born in a cellar at home, delivered by Dr. McGraw. We had one bedroom for my sister, myself, and my parents. We had a half bath and a kitchen. 7.5 years we lived in that place. There was no welfare. There was no food stamps. There was no safety net. But I always had plenty to eat. Because every time I asked for seconds, my dad would say, no, you had plenty. But the reason I was born with a silver spoon, my dad had only gone to the third grade. That's all the education he had. But why was I born with a silver spoon in my mouth? Because I was taught by my parents that life's a matter of making choices. Wherever you are, good or bad, because of choices you make. Don't blame anybody else, but if you get an education, you're willing to work and overcome problems and difficulties in this great country, you can amount to something. That's why I was born with a silver spoon. I was in this country and I was taught personal responsibility for choices you make.
Amen to that.
Yes.
Coach Lou Holes.
And that's so right.
It is.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
It is. There's, that statement couldn't, I mean, it's just, it's spot on. Thank you for coming back with us last hour of the show. And a big thank you to Chris Ann Hall for coming on. She always makes a lot of sense. And I really, after going through the numbers of the actual school shootings that they're including, please keep that in mind when they keep their rhetoric up and remind people in your circles on social media that they're lying. The media is lying about the number of events. We've had one high school student shot. That was just in Colorado a couple days ago. And we're almost halfway through the year. And not to minimize his personal death, but just to say that it isn't 43 incidences. And just on that note, we just wanted to mention real quick before we launch into this hour that students protested those politicians that were trying to hijack it for gun control. They walked
out.
Well,
there was an event as a vigil for Kendrick Castillo, the young man that attacked the shooters. And during the event, Senator Michael Bennett, Democrat from Colorado, and Representative Jason Crow, Democrat from Colorado, took a turn calling for gun control. And, and the students just left. They said, we are not going to be used. Mm-hmm. This isn't about gun control.
It's about what? It's about?
It's about mental illness.
Mm-hmm. For the two students that are accused. So
yep.
just to kind of wrap that up, we didn't mention that in the last segment, the show of the last hour. So I really wanted to make sure people knew that the students are seeing through this. And I'm glad at least total propaganda isn't quite working on them as much as the government media would like. Also, you're seeing a lot more plant-based foods. Even IKEA is toying with their very popular Swedish meatball, right?
Yep,
and they're turning it into plant-based.
Plant-based meatball.
The government for a very long time I'll give you the 1 minute Kate wrap up on that one, and I could be wrong, but it seems to me that they've been trying to acquire as much property, the government, as they possibly can. They were designated to a very, very small amount in the Constitution, but for some reason they got it up their craw to basically go after as much land as possible. And so they've actually been making it really tough on farmers and driving people off their lands by cutting off water and road access and not letting their cows graze, you know, things like this. People have been shot dead over these kinds of things. And lo and behold, the government takes the property. The government would like to take a lot of property. If something were to happen, I could go to my local farmer and buy some food from him, but I can't do that if the farmer doesn't exist. They are definitely seeking after as much land and to root as much farming out the window, and to also depend more and more on other countries for our food supply, which is really, really scary because we have a land that's very rich in resource, and also we can feed ourselves, and there's no real big dilemma there, but they're making it a dilemma. And that's why Tyson is investing in petri dish meat. You're going to see a lot more plant-based meat. You're going to see a lot more food end up in a petri dish out of a lab than you are, or plant-based, and even Burger King with their new burger. You're going to see a lot of shifts in this because they've been trying to do this for a very, very long time, is to get us wired for this and to take as much land as possible. Mm-hmm. They really want to usurp the land to root the farmers out.
Do you remember what Buellton, California was famous for?
What?
It's up I-5, Interstate 5, mm-hmm. driving north from Los Angeles. When you get to Buellton, you used to start seeing these signs. Mm-hmm. They had the greatest split pea soup.
Hmm. Okay.
So that's what you stopped. Buellton was a very small town, yeah. but you stopped there for the split pea
soup. There's a place in San Diego, too, but go ahead.
But they're in the news today mm-hmm. for something different.
What's up?
There's another restaurant there that posted a picture of one of their dishes. It's a suckling pig with refried beans and Mexican rice. But it also had a hashtag that read F Trump.
Really?
So because of that, now a lot of people on the social media are saying, let's not eat there.
You know what? I would too. I'm sorry. I would too.
There's no excuse for that.
Yeah, that's just... it's just wrong. I don't care whether you don't like his policies, but that's just going way above and beyond anything that even resembles any character or class or anything. Give me a break.
As much as I disliked Obama.
You didn't go there?
I wouldn't even consider going mm-hmm. to that extreme. Right. I mean, I don't, you never hear me call him president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. I agree. It's gone off the rails in so many ways. Speaking of food, I do want to talk about this myth that you brought up on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I want to go into that another layer deep because this information is going to surprise you. So we're going to have to run to keep up with ourselves in this hour. Here it is. Feeding America. Feeding America is a nationwide network, right? 200 yep. food banks and 60,000 food pantries alone run by Feeding America.
Uh-huh.
When the question was asked, how much will it cost per year from last year on to solve hunger? They said $265 billion a year to solve world hunger. The problem with that is you don't ever really solve it, right? You keep feeding them.
That's right.
Okay. When you brought this up, you brought up a couple of things the other day that were quite intriguing, and it's so true.
And you didn't believe it.
I didn't. I kept thinking, well, no, some people are using the language, this odd language, to describe the hungry and poor in America, but it couldn't be everybody. No, he was dead. You were dead on. Kudos to you. Because he brought this up, and I found this to be very, very interesting. More than 1 in 7 American households are food insecure. 1 in 7 Americans receive SNAP. There are 70,000 food pantries in America. Let me say this. You're going to be hearing a lot about this coming up in the election from the Bernie Sanders and the Biden. I call him the Biden because he's a creature all into his own. So you've got, and both of them are. But they can't give a speech without citing the poor right? Mm-hmm. Because they have to be able to convince you haves to give to the have-nots. Otherwise, you know, and I was describing this earlier a bit. It'd be like everybody having a Mercedes in every driveway in your neighborhood, but you have one neighbor that drives a Gremlin. And all of you kind of thought that, hey, you know, he deserves, he's entitled to drive a Mercedes. Well, take it a step farther. Okay, so then take money from all the neighbors by force and buy the guy a Mercedes, even though the guy gets to work just fine in his Gremlin. But you think he's entitled to this mm-hmm. this certain lifestyle. And then what socialism does is it puts all the neighbors, say, in a Ford Focus.
So, well, it doesn't put them all in a Mercedes,
no,
that's for sure.
It doesn't. And so you're going to be hearing so much about this, and this is why I want to hit this really hard. So 70 food pantries, and the first one was founded in 1967, okay? So you go back into history a little bit, and you ask yourself, well, my gosh, where did all of this start? You know, because when you really look at world life expectancy ratings in the U.S., hunger isn't at the top. It isn't. It's 180. In the United States, we're 180 down the list.
How many times have you heard me say nobody in the United States is starving to death?
They're not. They're not starving to death.
No.
You might be a little hungry. Your parents might make poor decisions. You might make poor decisions, but you're not starving. There's a clear difference why they say people in Africa are starving, and they call it food insecurity and at risk here. They don't say starving here.
Look, Lou Holtz just said it. I knew I had a golden spoon in my mouth, and every time I asked for seconds, I was told I had enough.
Plenty, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I had plenty. Yeah. I had plenty because I was told I had plenty.
Yeah. It didn't mean that he was eating, five bags of Doritos sitting in front of the TV.
That's right.
It meant that his parents were frugal, and they had to be.
And I'm not picking on anybody, but when you see people in the grocery store using mm-hmm. food assistance, mm-hmm. they're buying junk food.
Yeah, and that's a whole nother show on choices. But here we go. Your chances of starving in the United States of America are one in every 200,000 people. That same exact odds go to lightning strike and dying in a passenger plane. That's one in 200,000, too. That's how many people are starving in this country. They've had about 1,700 deaths, I think, in this country per year due to starvation. If there's only that many people starving in the United States of America, why are we spending billions of dollars? Why do we have all these programs and Farm Aid? And I mean, you know, where they were feeding the hungry and we're sending all of this food overseas. And we've been doing this for a very, very long time.
Well, that's exactly what I think mm-hmm. is going on. Mm-hmm. That money's not going to feed Americans.
Right.
That money's going to send overseas, which, you know what? If I knew where it was going, I don't know that I'd object to that.
But the money's taken from us by force,
yes.
by taxes, by theft, by plunder. And so do you want to know if there's a hunger and poverty problem in America? By the time the Declaration of Independence in 1776 was signed, hunger was considerably less severe here than it ever was in Europe. Our life expectancy here was 20 years more. We lived to the ripe old age of 51. They died off in their 30s. And we actually, the scarcity of hunger in the U.S. was due to part of low population pressure in relation to fertile land. But at the same time, our problem here was not a ginormous problem. And the number of hungry and homeless people increased in the 1870s due to industrialization. But here's the caveat. The people helped them. We did not have a safety net. So you had Red Cross. You had all of these different entities that went in to help. Now Red Cross is government, you know, funded. But there were companies that had donations, and then there were neighbors, and they knew who those were that were on that perpetual, not temporary even, but just perpetual, you know, problem of welfare recipient or needed help by a neighbor. So they were happy to do it, and they knew who they were. And we had cities and towns that we knew. We just knew people. It was not an easy thing to say you were poor back in that time. We'll be right back in the Kate Daly Show.
Talk lines are open now. Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Whoa. games people play now. Every night and every day now. Never meaning what they say now. Never saying what they mean. While they while away the hours in their ivory towers, till they're covered up with flowers in the back of a black limousine.
Amen to that. Welcome back. This is an important hour because I hope we shed some light on a really troubling manipulation in our country for decades. And I can't wait to lay all this out. Okay. When polled, 96% of those who were labeled in poverty said that their kids never went to bed hungry. 96%. That only leaves 4%. That went to bed hungry, but we're spending billions of dollars.
Of the poor. Who are labeled poor.
Yeah.
Who can actually make well above the poverty rate.
Yes. So obviously something's going on. Something's been tweaked. What in the world is going on? So let me put it this way. We had the Roaring Twenties, right? And the Roaring Twenties helped lower food prices. And during the 20s and even back to 1910, Rockefeller and Carnegie, they were all sending money overseas to China. They had poor people actually starving at the time. And we were sending a lot of money overseas. Mm-hmm. We get to the Roaring Twenties and we have so much food, we're sending it to Europe. The 30s come along and we have a manipulated stock market crash, very manipulated by the central bankers so they could insert central banking. So, yes, you saw lines for food.
Yeah.
Of course you would. It was manipulated to be so. But at the same time, we could have worked ourselves out of that just like we had before. We had actually done quite well in a relatively short period of time in this country using capitalism and using the land and, yep. And basically feeding ourselves, okay? Not a problem. A lot of people moved into the cities away from the farming communities and away from a lot of the food, too. But I'll get to that in just a second because I have a comment from somebody back in 1912 I want to share with you. So basically you go into the 40s and we're hit with war and we are hit with trying to get out of that and get back on track and find our feet again. It's interesting what got proposed in mid 1940s.
President Truman signed into act in 1946 the National School Lunch Program. A lot of people think that's a recent program.
No.
1946.
Yep.
And just to show you, they claim that in 2018, 30 million kids were fed by that program.
Wow.
In 2018, only 56 million kids were in K-12 in the United States. Half of them fed by that program.
Half. Okay. Do half need to be fed? Let's talk about this for just a second. So we're rolling in from the 40s. We have a lot of new socialism programs that we've adopted. And socialism programs always kind of work pretty well in the beginning because people are getting money. But, man, they never, ever work out, do they? And it's theft, so there's no authority to do so. But we had adopted all these programs. We had income tax, we had Social Security. We had all these programs that we were paying through the nose for. So then you introduce school lunch. In the 50s, let's go to the 50s. The 50s, we were doing quite well. I don't know how many of you were around in the 50s, but the average income was about $3,300 a year. And you could buy a car on time for about $2,200, a gallon of gas, 30 cents, a loaf of bread, 18 cents, eggs, 9 cents. I mean, you know, a gallon of milk around the same. So it depended on what you bought, but people were frugal. We were just coming out of a war period and people were still frugal and getting on their feet. And what I find kind of interesting is if you go from the mid 50s to the mid 60s now, Our income jumped 10 grand a year per person. We went from $3,300 a year to $4,300 a year. Biggest jump we've ever seen. We were that industrious. We were doing that well. Now, we were frugal. We didn't have all of our wants, but we had needs met, and we were able to get along. And if you did have to, if you went to the government for help, I mean, it was shameful. It was like, oh my gosh. And as it should be, because we are a people of productivity. We are not a people that would consent to plunder, right? Plunder is theft by taxes. So we roll into the 60s now. And what's very interesting is Nixon declares that we want to rediscover poverty in America. We want to take a good old look at that under the hood. Do we have a problem? I think we have a problem with poverty, even though our income base had just jumped 10 grand. Now, if you look through the rest of the years, it only jumps like $1,000 or $2,000, even if that, and a lot of it's stagnant. But 10 grand was a huge jump from the 50s to 60s.
So the most Nixon, prosperous yeah. decade in our
yes,
history.
Yes. So Nixon goes, you know, I think we need to relook at this. Robert Kennedy goes down and he visits the most poor area of the United States in Mississippi. And I mean the most poor. And if you look at their own government websites, they say that this area was not like any other in the country. He goes there and then claims we have a hunger problem for the whole country. Okay. Uses that very small part of Mississippi to declare countrywide hunger and poverty. To get more socialism programs going through. So we go into the 60s, right? We're in the 60s right now. And all of a sudden, because of that declaration, not only were we hit in the 40s with major socialism and then on with student lunch and so forth, but then we were hit with Congress putting through legislation that enacted a lot of the programs we have today. Affordable housing is in the 60s. All the programs that were to help the poor, we're going to go help the poor. We're going to make sure they can live in the community of their dreams. We're going to make sure that that people are given the quality of life that we want to make sure they have, not the quality of life they're working for or that they should be having due to their choices in life, because there's a lot of personal responsibility here. But I thought it was amazing that Robert F. Kennedy's tour of the Mississippi Delta is what was one of the biggest catalysts of launching us into what they called the hunger lobby. That's what was referred to by the journalists, the hunger lobby. So in 1970, the U.S. federal expenditure on hunger grew by 500%.
Woo!
With food stamps distributed free of charge to those in greatest need, but they wanted to change it too. They wanted to make sure that you got to choose the food you wanted, and it was a lot more quiet, and it was just under the radar just a little bit more. And what did they do? Gave it to more and more people. So in the 70s, food banks became an accepted part of America's response to hunger. Now, let me ask you this, Uncle Milty. Do you remember all the people, let's say the last month, you've been to the mall, maybe you've been shopping, you've been to the grocery store, church. Mm-hmm. How many starving people, like the people we see on the cover of Africa Times, Kenya Times, have you seen in America?
I saw one lady, I think, but she had that disease, that eating disorder.
Okay. Anorexia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other than that, no, okay. None.
Now,
none.
We're not being insensitive here. We know that kids are sometimes the product of bad parental choices that result in their own hunger, okay? And so we understand that when it comes to kids, it is unfair that parents make horrible choices and want to have a cell phone or drugs over food or whatever the case may be.
But a 500% increase in money
70s.
Is not helping starvation. It's not helping hunger. Mm-hmm. It's creating dependency.
Yes. Because it's not temporary in any way. See, back in the 1800s and the early 1900s, what happened was people rallied. You had people, churches, and nonprofits. So they, of course, because they were controlling their own donations coming in for this, or people only had so much money, they could only help so much. So the help was very temporary. And people got on their feet. Well, this kind of assistance, of course, was more permanent because they could actually
stay there.
They could stay there and you weren't kicked off. And so the demand for the services for emergency hunger relief agencies increased all the way into the late 90s. Now we had food banks. Now we had student lunch. Now half the kids are getting student lunch. Do they really need that? I don't think so. And over the summer, by the way, they encourage you to go over the
now
summer.
You go
Why?
In summer.
Because they broadened the definition of poor. See, back in the 60s, when Kennedy went to the Mississippi Delta, they didn't have a definition for what poverty was.
No.
So they had to create what they thought poverty was. Poverty in America is not like poverty in Kenya, in a third world country without property ownership and without opportunity and without anything. Here, this wasn't the same case scenario. But what do you do? What do you do when you have a society that's making great gains and doing quite well? You can't adopt socialism in a country without all the have-nots. You can't propose an idea like socialism and have people rally for it and say that they're entitled to something that they haven't earned and get the empathy card out and say, well, my gosh, everybody deserves a cell phone and a two-bedroom apartment and a blender and a coffee maker and air conditioning. Everybody deserves this. You can't do that unless you have a lot of those people that have met that under that line. So they created a line in America. And this was after a lot of prosperity, by the way. And then we, in the 70s, see, we had that, you know, rigged oil problem, right? Do you remember standing in line for oil? So that was completely rigged. And it made it look like, my gosh, we had no opportunities. We did have interest rates rising. We had unemployment problems. But people were still eating. And that's why even today, 96% say, well, we're not hungry. We just don't have stocked shelves. Well, stocked shelves and having some food to eat are two very different things.
Yes.
People with means will have stocked shelves.
Well,
but not people that are struggling paycheck to paycheck.
Another manipulation was the definition of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And even today.
Right.
Let's say that the national poverty level is set at $20,000 mm-hmm. a year.
Right.
To qualify for a lot of these programs, you can make as much as 130% of the poverty level.
Yes,
so that
can.
Means
yeah, way over. Mm-hmm.
If you're making $26,000 a year mm-hmm. and the poverty level's $20,000, you still are in poverty.
Yes, yes. And that had to be absolutely created. They didn't create that before. You have people with mental health problems that I can see that the way to solve that problem is that you have people that would say, come live with me. I will help and support you for
yes.
a while or whatever the case may be. We have a lot of caring, loving people in the United States that are ready to help. And we've demonstrated that over and over again. Why? How many times you see them feeding the hungry? Anyway, so you have a lot of programs. And in 2013, they said 14,000 American households, 14% of all American households in 2013 were food insecure. What does that mean?
Food insecure.
Uh-huh. And also we have food insecurity, and we also are at risk of being hungry.
At risk for hunger.
But not actually hungry.
No.
There is such a difference. Talk about Africa, you're going to say they're starving.
Yes.
You have some communities in Africa that are absolutely without food and starving.
Yep.
But not, they can't say those words. I am actually urging you to go do a Google search of this when I get off the show today. Do a Google search and just look it up. And I'm going to tell you the headlines that you're going to see never, ever state there's an actual problem. Only a perceived problem.
Yep.
And so much manipulation went on in the 60s to give us this. And why did Nixon want to rediscover poverty all of a sudden? Well, when you run out of ways to grab hold of a lot of income in America, and you also are going to have a whole platform built on it, right? Because Bernie, like
sure.
I said, Bernie and Biden can't make a speech without referring to this. This is their whole mantra for being. This is how you introduce socialism and how you get it real cozy with the American citizens that are actually doing pretty darn well considering the rest of the world. If you want to prop us up to the rest of the world, our poor are not anything like some of the world's poor.
No.
And by the way, we've been sending a lot of money out for a long, long time to a lot of countries. If you thought we had a problem with people starving here, do you actually think we'd be sending out all of this cash to all of these countries and all of the food relief to other countries?
We couldn't.
Yeah, you're
We'd
exactly right.
We'd have to be
right.
feeding our own people.
I want to read you a statement from 1912. Very surprising and very interesting statement from somebody in 1912. Cover of New York Times. Be right back. Kate Daly Show.
Cedar City and Missouri. Here, we celebrate the women in our life. You thank you. And your gift to be perfect. Mac and Sons, the master jewelers.
Call 888-673-1450. This is the Kate Daly Show.
Welcome back, Kate Daly Show. talking about the myth of food and hunger. And if you're asking yourself, kind of like what I did, well, certainly people are really, really hungry. We wouldn't be having Stamp Out Hunger and Feeding America and, oh my gosh, all the drives and the
Oprah.
So many projects, yes, around hunger. And we have since the 1960s. Let me tell you this. The 60s blamed the 50s for, we have a problem with hunger because they're spending a third of their income on food. Well, that just depended on the choices you made. You made about $3,300 a year, and your rent was very low. And
you were eating T-bone steaks three times a week.
Yeah, I mean, it depended on your choices. And if you grew up in the 50s, you remember it was kind of a frugal time. You just didn't have everything you wanted. You weren't buying $200 PlayStations for Christmas, right? So it was a more frugal time. But they manipulated that. So in the 60s, even though we were doing better at the jump from the 50s to 60s than we'd ever been doing in America financially, they decided we had a poverty problem. They manipulated it. And the reason I say this is I want you to listen to this. Listen to these couple of headlines. Reading, writing, and hunger. More than 13 million kids in this country are going hungry. And then in the article it says, now listen to these two sentences back to back. Food insecurity is a family that has enough money to buy groceries. Because remember, they're saying everybody's food insecure. But they can still buy groceries. Then they follow it up with, kids who go to school hungry may suffer an inability to concentrate. Insinuating that, yeah, they can buy groceries, but kids are going to school hungry. Does that make sense to any of you? Here's another one. U.S. is a land of plenty, so why are millions of America at risk for hunger? Notice how they say at risk. They don't say starving. They don't say they are being
missing meals.
Yes, people are being deprived of food. Right.
They're at risk.
They say they're at risk because they're insecure about where their next meal is coming from, not that they might not have a next meal. Does that make sense? So would they like their cupboard stocked? Certainly, but they can't afford to do that. So they go meal to meal. And that's considered food insecurity. And that's why they're saying 50 million Americans. This is exactly the headline. 11 myths about global hunger by the United Nations. Hunger is a relevant issue in the United States where 50 million people are food insecure. Think about that. 50 million. If people were starving, you would notice 50 million people starving around you.
Well,
you couldn't go anywhere without noticing it.
Is that 50 million on top of the 44 million that are on food stamps or including the 44?
I think it's including.
I don't.
You don't. You think it's on top
If they're getting food stamps, they're not food insecure.
Yeah. Well, they're yes, and you're exactly right on this point because they're getting the food stamps because they're food insecure.
Of course.
But they don't stop calling them food insecure. That's your point. Got it. Okay. I want to see where you're going with that. Okay. So they still include them under that umbrella. And so the problem is never solved. You want to solve world hunger? Well, you can't. So back in 1910, the death rate was about 15 people to every 1,000 people. The death rate today is 7 people per 1,000 people. It's gone down. It's gone down because people aren't starving to death. They're not starving to death. And when I say hunger, I'm talking taking money out of the citizens' pocketbooks to feed people in desperate need of hunger. Well, they're calling it food insecurity, but they've developed all these programs and truly one of the biggest scams in America, because I guarantee you people would have helped along the way too themselves without the government taking this role. So a lot of money, because they are the middleman and they have to get their cut, is going to the government agencies. It's going to these very agencies that say they want to, you know, stamp out hunger and feed America and so on and so forth. So what do we describe as poor in America? What do we describe as poor? Well, there was actually a study done, and this was kind of interesting, because the study actually said that by Heritage Foundation, that the people that are declared poor actually have air conditioning and heat. They actually have a roof over their head. They are usually making 20-odd some thousand a year with a family of four. Mm-hmm. You have food, because that's why 96% said, well, we're not really hungry, but we don't know how we're going to buy groceries next week, but they end up buying the groceries next week.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, they also have a vehicle, a cell phone. In fact, the poor, even I think a Catholic organization took this apart too and said, well, the poor are not really poor in the world standards.
No,
not at all.
As a matter of fact,
it's a very wealthy poor. If you want to go against, you know, certain standards,
the poor in the United States of America are 5 percenters in the world.
Yeah, yeah. Let me read this statement to you. This was so fascinating to me. This was on the cover of the New York Times. And this author wrote this about the problem of people leaving the farms and going to the cities and then crying over being hungry, right? There were there were some people that were crying over being hungry, and they were trying to work out how they were going to help them. He said, listen to this, because it's in the language of 1912. The number left to work at agriculture is decreasing in proportion to the mass is not due to the fact that boys are rushing into the farms and into the cities, from the farms into the cities. There's still, okay, even with that, even with everybody going to the farms, he said, there's still, or into the cities from the farms, there still would be the starving hundreds or thousands if every farmer's son should be chained fast to a stump with a hoe tied to his hands. If every country girl should be locked tight in a dairy or condemned by law to a life work of putting up canned fruits and frying donuts. I told you it was 1912. It is not the fact that fewer men upon the farms can in these days produce more than formerly was the case, which was responsible for the hunger in the tenement cities. So he's saying production's very, very high. So it's not like the fewer men that are left on the farms that are still there can't produce enough food, because they can. He said men are in want today for the same reasons that they have always made men want. The wall of starving babies is heard in many tenements, and women err and men go wrong in striving to secure necessities of life. But this is not because of any short production of the staples. This isn't because of a shortage of food. He said, but because the ones who find themselves inadequately supplied have not had anything to give in fair exchange for what they need. Does that sound like a job?
Yeah.
Okay. Or maybe you're not working two jobs. Maybe you need to work two jobs, but you don't want to.
Or maybe you truly are in need because of a disability.
Yes.
That's a possibility, too.
And that's where people clamored to help, was in the case of disability, mental illness,
course,
you know, mental
because those are obvious
retardation, all
to
kinds
help.
Of things. Yep. So he goes on and he says this last thing. He says, this may be due to real ill fortune, like you just said.
Mm-hmm.
It may be due to indolence. And there are men and women who will suffer bitterly from want, rather than bestir themselves to work for what they actually need. It may be due to natural incompetence, for which, of course, the victims are not individually responsible. They're just incompetent. He said it certainly is not due to a real insufficiency of production. We've always had major food production in this country. It hasn't changed.
For those of you who went to public school, indolence, the definition of indolence is avoidance of activity or exertion.
Mm-hmm.
Laziness.
Yes.
That's what indolence means.
Yes, because he's saying, look, they want things, but they're not willing to exchange what they have for want. Because as farmers went to the cities to live in the industrial age, they realized they were far away from the food. They were far away from a lot of their, the things that helped them with those staples. And then, of course, they had to devise new ways to deal with this, right?
Yep.
As people were kind of clamoring to get into the cities. And so it is really important, I think, to understand the manipulation that's gone on, because the problem has stayed the same and the rate has not varied a whole lot throughout the last over 100 years.
Percentage-wise, it's almost been virtually identical.
Yes, but we've spent billions and billions of dollars. Uncle Milty, they said it's going to take $265 billion every year to solve hunger. That's a lot of money. Where's it going to go? Because we're not actually solving hunger. No, because
hunger's not that big a problem.
In the student lunch arena, they tell people to go in the summer and go get the lunch. Why? Because they want more on the books that say they're poor.
That's right.
Then they get more money from you and I for the programs. It's a really easy game that they're playing.
Well, you don't have to be poor to take advantage of some of these services.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take advantage of the service, they get to count you as poor.
Yeah.
And that's a bigger reason not to take advantage of these services than just the fact that you're cheating.
Right.
Because by allowing them to use you as a poor person number, you're perpetuating this myth
Yeah.
of hunger.
Yeah. They claimed that we were full of poverty and hunger at a time in America when it was relatively low, being handled by neighbors and churches and nonprofits, okay? And they declared and decided at a time of actual prosperity that we had a major problem. And lo and behold, started getting legislation through in the bundles to be able to justify and make legal the plunder that they take from you and your taxes, which plunder is a great word for theft, that they take from you to solve this problem. Affordable housing, we only have more poor, right? Mm-hmm. Because 50 million Americans, oh my gosh, we have more poor. Has affordable housing helped since the 60s? They started doing it in the 60s. Now you tell me, we've had now how many decades, of course, to go over this 50 years. In the last 50 years, have you seen more poor? Because they always say, once we build this affordable housing, we're helping the poor, and it will get them off and get them going, and we've helped them, and it's, and they're good to go. Nope, it's only increased. It's only increased. Yep. Why? Because of the boundaries in which they place poverty, but also because it's become permanent, not temporary. It's a huge, huge problem. The problem of trying to understand why we even do affordable housing. I mean, it's amazing the lie that we're told about affordable housing, too.
The fact of the matter is that in the United States of America, mm-hmm. the people that get out of poverty do so by themselves.
Yeah.
They decide they don't want to live this way anymore. And they get an education or they learn a trade and they get a job and they get out of it.
A local resident told me, well, somebody that grows up in a city should probably be able to stay in the city that they want. And if there's no affordable housing for them that they can afford, we should build it. And I said, well, here's the deal with this. If you're raised in a community, you're probably going to have some connections to some people that are going to know you. And they might even offer you a job or what have you. If you have zero connections, and I don't know anyone that's been raised in a community that doesn't know anybody, but okay. Do you have a right? Are you entitled to stay in the community of your choosing? And do they have to make housing for you that's affordable? No. Here's the answer nobody wants to hear. You have to decide to move. And I am so sorry, but you're going to have to move to a place that has more affordable housing for you. Housing where somebody makes the money and it's just lower rent. We have to make personal choices. If you have 13 children and you're only making $1,000 a month, that's on you. That's your personal choice to do so. The state shouldn't have to rescue you and your family. It's a personal choice. When are we ever going to be responsible for our personal choices in this? Because, well, we've created dependency, and now it's really easy to see how the dependency plays out because you have a safety net under you all the time, whereas we used to have to scramble a little bit for that safety net.
Yep.
And it made you not want to have a safety net ever again, right?
Yes, but a lot of it is how we looked at life, too.
Yeah.
When I grew up, we lived with, my mother was divorced. Mm-hmm. We lived with our grandparents. I shared a room with two uncles, a bedroom with two uncles.
Right.
My mother shared a room with her sister.
Wow.
My sister shared a room with my grandmother.
But Uncle Milty, I'm entitled to have a two-bedroom apartment. It's what I want. It's the life I'm used to. And I want you to make sure I can still have that.
But I was happy. I was happy.
Exactly.
We had a lovely family.
I love your point. Because you make sacrifices and choices. And that's what it was supposed to be in America. It wasn't supposed to be socialism 101, where we take money from all the people in the middle class and we make sure that we divide the classes and then give that money to people who are never getting off the system. When churches had it handled in nonprofits and people, they were very discriminatory about where that money went and for how long. And that's the idea behind it, to keep that number very low. In America, we can handle the number of disabled. We can handle helping the number of mentally challenged, all of the ones that really, truly need some assistance. But no, we've jumped the shark on this.
Throughout the history of the world, when socialism takes over and you try to guarantee a standard of living to everyone, you end up with everyone with the same standard of living.
Yes.
They're all poor.
Yes. In fact, what did that author say on the cover of the New York Times? It was so eloquent, clear back in 1912, that diagnosed the same exact problem we have today. Men are in want today for the same reasons that they have always